what I believe. I don't care what anybody else believes. Good television is the combination of the two guys who are out in front who are getting the publicity, but they are at the mercy of the guys in the truck. Because a lot of the young people of today, sometime when you go, they don't understand some of the charts. You know, you want to really bring them in on the history of a franchise. Everyone said that three in the booth on a radio would never work.
Right.
Well, I think that we proved that three in the booth on radio could be every bit as good as television.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Bette Marston. And our guest this week is the Basketball Hall of Famer and the longtime NBA television radio analyst, Hubie Brown. He really does not need that much of an introduction. We'll give him a short one. Hubie joined ESPN ABC in December of 2004 after he retired as the head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies. That followed, obviously, a long coaching career in the NBA and the ABA. Hubie now calls games for ESPN and for ESPN Radio. This will be his 31st year of broadcasting the NBA playoffs. That's amazing. Including working with USA Network, CBS, Turner, and now for ESPN. He's a teacher in the booth. Probably more accurate would be he's a professor in the booth. And he gives you a perspective from the coaching box. Whenever you listen to Hubie Brown, or at least I should say whenever I listen to Hubie Brown, I always feel like I'm being educated or I'm listening to a seminar on basketball. He's kind of an amazing guy, and I believe he is 82 now and still going strong. Thank you for the great interest in the previous podcast we've had with Ivan Maisel and Zach Lowe. We have some good ones coming up, including the ESPN analyst Kara Lawson and the WWE reporter Renee Young on the eve of WrestleMania. But that's a couple weeks away. For now, let's go to Hubie Brown. Okay, and as promised, here is the ESPN NBA analyst, Hubie Brown. Does not need an introduction, though I just gave him one. Hubie, thank you very much for joining us on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Well, it's a pleasure.
Hubie, I can define your broadcasting style, and I might use words like professorial or someone who's very much into respecting the audience and providing the audience with explanations about what they see and why they see it. But how would you describe your broadcasting style, if you indeed can describe it?
Well, I think that the main point is that you want to be a teacher. You never want to underestimate the IQ of the listener. It's like when I did clinics for coaches around the world for 40 years, you never underestimate the audience. What you do is put out the product. Now on television, the main thing is that people watching the game, whatever level of basketball IQ, they want to know why it's happening. They don't want to have you talk about what they just saw because they just saw it. But why did it happen? So to me, the pressure is on the analyst to be able to see all 10 people. Because the people watching the game, unless they are coaches, they have a tendency to just watch the ball. So it's basically in an area of 2 against 2 or 3 against 3. Well, when a coach looks at the floor, he's seeing all 10 people in operation. So when a successful play incurs, that you then explain why it happened because you see all 10 people. Because in the NBA, the best offenses are in misdirection. That means going one way to make the defenses move and then come back the other way for what you really want, whether it's option 1, 2, or 3, or even 4. So to me, the pressure is on you to see everything and then to be able to explain why it happened so that the audience now feels like he's learning about the process of the game at this level, and also the intensity and physicalness that it's played at. Because at the high school and college level, the game is played at 10 feet. But in the NBA, because of the incredible athleticism, we play at the top of the box above the rim, which is 11 feet. So it's a different type of a game.
Hubie, as a viewer, could I train myself to watch away from the ball, or would I have to be in a position like yours, having coached, having been part of organized basketball, where it just becomes part of my ecosystem? Because as a viewer, I'm sure I do the same thing. I, generally speaking, follow the ball. Sometimes I'll just try to play like a game with myself and just follow one player around the court to watch because that's interesting. But I wonder, just as a viewer, is there anything I can do to see the game as you do, or would my only shot being basically to be part of a organized basketball and be part of it for years so that my how I look at it would change?
Well, here's what I say to coaches, because when you do a coaching clinic, you could have people there from grammar school level, high school coaches, AAU coaches, junior college, women's pro, men's pro, etc. So what you say to them is, can you see all 10 people? This is not something which just because you're a coach, you see all 10. But that's what separates the coaching level of IQ, is what do you see? Can you see everything in the development of the offense or the defense and what their theories are as the game is going on? Now, the fan is limited to how much IQ he can develop because of the camera angles. The angles now could only possibly cover maybe three players versus three. So unless they use the high camera or the end camera, you really can't see the entire half-court situation. So that's a tough question. But I think as people enjoy the game and go to more games, they will then begin to have a total appreciation of what is going in the width of the court. And that's why the San Antonio and the Golden State offenses are so beautiful to watch, because they use the width of the court, and because they are the two best three-point shooting teams we have in the league, because they stretch the court that wide. There are some teams that can do this, except they can't shoot the percentages.
Hubie, when you are learning about the game today, and I know that you, I imagine, approach this as a lifelong learner, do you find yourself learning the most from meeting with coaches, talking to players, watching either film at home or watching live games at home? I'm curious as to how you educate yourself in the game today.
Well, first of all, I have a folder on every team that goes back for a number of years, even though the talent on the team can change. And today it changes drastically versus, say, 20 years ago. There might be a turnover today of 7 or 8 players on one team. So what I try to do is I have my folders on each team, and then also what I have, I try to see each team live, on video, because you have DirecTV. I see at least 2 games of that team before I do the team. Then when we go to the event, when we do the interviews with the players, well, naturally, we just try to ask a couple different things. But the main thing is, when you deal with the coaches now, you have seen them for their 2 previous games. You know the current stand of who's available. You also know of the different injuries, because this is important to the fan. He wants to know, not only is this guy available tonight, but they want to know where he is in minutes to play, and then also the coaches give you that of what they are expecting out of that guy who's coming off the injury list. Well, all of that comes to you because of preparation. It's preparation no different than any profession. When you have the material available, it now comes down to you putting in the time so that you are currently on top of this team. Then the coaching interview helps that. And then when you go to the game, you have all of the statistics accumulated and everything is broken down for you in where they rank and X and X and X. Then it comes down to, well, what do you have in front of you? Are you an analyst who just believes in feel of the game? Or are you an analyst who comes, who knows where they are ranked in every single area, then also where they are in home and away, and then also the history of the team, where they were, say, in the past 3 or 4 years and what they did in the playoffs, and then the history of the team itself. And I feel you owe it to the fan, if the lead announcer brings back the history and they show up at the rafters, what's up there, well, you should be able to talk about how many championships, who were on those teams, coaches, the all-NBA type of guys, etc. Because you owe that, and especially you should come to the game with a sidebar of at least 10 different topics. Because an NBA game being 48 minutes, we're doing 2.5 hours minimum versus a 2-hour college game. So the key there is if we have a bad game, that we can go to different issues and you're on top of different issues that are going on throughout the league. Because you never want to lose the audience in a bad game. You want the audience to stay, and then you also want them to feel that they know that we'll be talking about why, because they've heard you in the past, you and your partner, and they know that they'll be talking about maybe what you would call jewels of things that are going outside of this arena, but today are happening within the league.
Hubie, if I was to be next to you at a game, what would I be seeing in front of you? What are your charts and or notes for a game look like?
Well, I mean, everybody always laughs, but I have papers. I have the stats stuff that the league each team gives you, where you have every player and what they've done in every stat, and then everything is circled. And also, then I have the pluses of the offense. I might have down 6 or 7 things, and then the pluses of the defense. Then also their differentials of why their defenses are good, why their offenses are good, and then the sidebar stuff of things which have happened, maybe say October, November, December, then January, February, March. I'll have what they are different there. Then also you want to bring out during the game, it's important that even though this team has a good record, I always have 4 things. What are they against the plus 500? What are they against the minus 500? Because you have a lot of teams that have good records but cannot beat the good teams, or they have minus records against, well, they're not going anywhere at playoff time. They might kill all of the bad teams, but you know they'll probably go out in either the first or second round. Then games that are decided by 3 points or less, and then games that are decided by 6 points or less. These things, to me, are very important because in the NBA, so many games are decided in the last 6 minutes. And then when we get down to the last 3 minutes, it comes to execution. Can these teams coming in, you'll know because you've been watching it and you've been following it, can they execute and set up their best 3 offensive players for high percentage shots in their best areas? And then are they getting there? And then are they getting to the foul line? See, these are things to me, because I'm talking to you now like I would be talking to my staff if I were coaching this game. See, I feel that the fan has got to understand that these 10 guys just didn't meet at 6:30 for an 8 o'clock game.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of preparation, and you want the fan to understand what a level this is of philosophies, offense and defensively, and how much is involved.
Hubie, one of the things that we talk about a lot on this podcast is process. Can you take us as specific as you want to be from what your preparation is the night before your assignment through your game day preparation up until tip-off? What are you doing in relation to preparing for that game, understanding that you're preparing throughout the season for every game?
Well, the night that, let's say that we're coming in for a Sunday game, so we'll get there Friday night. Well, the stats in that from the home team will already been there on both teams, even though they might be playing Friday night. So what I'll do is once you get into the hotel and you get settled, then what I do is I try to break down the stats off of the one that each team is giving you about every single player, all right? And then also the page I break down about their schedules and where they rank in home, away, total wins and losses, home, away breakdown, and what they do against the East and what they do against the West and whether they're overtime games. See, that will tell me a lot. That page is there for you. Then they'll tell you what they are in October, November, December, January, February, up to where we are. Then also where you are. So I want to do all of that the night before. Then the next morning, when we get the graphics that are going to come in, plus whatever else that I have to complete about what I just got finished talking to you on the previous situation, pull together. Now we'll go and we'll do the interviews. Once we go and do the interviews of both teams, the star players that are going to the video drop-ins during the game, and then also the coaches, now after we come back from lunch, we'll have a little production meeting, and then I want to go to the room, block everything out, and then for the next three more hours, pull together everything that you have coming in off the games that you watch during the week, the two games, then what you have in the preparation of the statistics given by the home team, then by what you hear from the coaches, all right, and then also our production people, what type of graphics have they brought in, and are they bringing in enough about history? Because a lot of the young people of today, sometime when you go, they don't understand some of the charts. You know, you want to really bring them in on the history of a franchise. And then when you go to the game, you always want to be current in talking to key assistant coaches, guys that you respect who are excellent teachers. And then also you want to bump into as they come out to shoot before the game, because we get there 2.5 hours to 2 hours, never less than 2 hours before the game. So you're seeing them out there on the floor, the players, being worked out by the coaches. Now, that's all different depending upon the organization of the team and how much they really are working with their young people. But you can gain info on each kid and then also the size and what the guys are working at. Now, all of that you take into because you owe that to the fan. You owe that to the audience that's watching this game, that you now not only come prepared from your statistics and your breakdowns and all your material, but now you're also verbally talking to guys that you respect and who know you either as an ex-coach or they know you as an analyst doing games for years. They'll come and they'll come over and say, and they'll talk to you, so you get another insight one-on-one with that individual and a real feel of what's going on in his life in regards to basketball.
Hubie, I think this, if I'm right about this, this is your 30th year of doing full-time television, so some kind of national television connection.
No, this is my 28th.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Full-time, and then I did 3 years of playoffs whenever my teams didn't make the playoffs.
Okay. So 28th year full-time, Stevie.
28 and then 3 years part-time. So 31 playoffs.
31 plus. All right. I appreciate you correcting me on that. And you worked for USA, CBS, Turner, ESPN, ABC, obviously. At what point of your broadcasting journey, Hubie, did you feel comfortable being on television and the radio?
Well, see, that's a very good question, because I still get a high getting up for whether it is on radio, the conference finals and in the finals, or whether I'm doing television for an event, because I never coached a game at the high school, college, and NBA level of where I wasn't up for the game or excited for the game. To me, you are never blasé, because then that's how you're going to come across over that telecast. That fan wants to hear the interest that you are in the game, and they don't want to hear you drift off if that game gets away into a bad game. They want to make sure that you're up enough, the enthusiasm is there, so that they know that you're going to go to things away from the game that are of interest through the league or through the history of the league. And since I've been around in the NBA since 1973, they, at least, you know, when you bump into people in the hotels or on planes or, you know, in the building itself or wherever you might be, they like to talk to you about history, about things. And it's always nice that you can give them things of maybe that they were not thinking of. You're not trying to sway them, but what you're trying to give them is the other side of old-time basketball and great people that played the game and coached the game versus the present style of basketball that they only might be current in, and that they should not look down upon the past basketball because of how it was built.
Hubie, is there someone in your years of television, whether it was a behind-the-scenes producer or director or one of your on-air colleagues, who you really credit maybe early on in your broadcasting career for either teaching you the mechanics or giving you the comfort level that you needed to be successful in broadcasting?
Well, look, I never had television. I was never thinking of television because I was always doing basketball. And in my NBA, in my ABA first, NBA, then ABA, and then NBA careers, I was always coaching and then doing another 25 to 30 clinics, whether it was here in the United States or in FIBA basketball around the world. So I was always into those two things and then doing another 20 to 25 corporation speeches a year. So when 1980 came and I was out of a job, Jim Zrake from USA and Eddie Doucette, who when I was an assistant at Milwaukee was the voice of the Milwaukee Bucks when they were really great with Kareem and Oscar, right, and Larry Costello was the head coach. He suggested to Jim Zrake that they should try me out or think of me to work the Eastern games, because back when that happened in 81, they needed someone in the East. So I went and interviewed, and they gave me the job, and I worked with Al Albert, who was terrific. We did the first game on the doubleheader on Thursday nights, and then Eddie Doucette and Steve Jones did the West Coast games. Now, that was a learning experience. Now, when I did that for a year, and then I was back coaching the Knicks, so forth. But when I went full-time with CBS, I was very fortunate to work with a great team. Dick Stockton was the announcer, and then Mike Burks and Sandy Grossman were the producer and the directors.
Wow.
Now, when I won the Kirk Gardy Award at the Hall of Fame.
Right.
I I said, listen, I'm happy and I'm privileged to be winning this award. But the one thing that you must understand about this award, the analyst is only good as the announcer. The announcer who has got to understand a surface knowledge, and you're there because of substance. And consequently, the producer and director, when they are a heartbeat or a blink of an eye with the pictures behind what you're talking about, this is a four-man production. And you never can be an outstanding announcer or analyst unless these four people are in place. And this is just what I believe. I don't care what anybody else believes. Good television is the combination of the two guys who are out in front who are getting the publicity, but they are at the mercy of the guys in the truck. When the guys in the truck, that producer and director, are on the same page as you, and their camera guys who are, when you talk about that level of the NBA, you know, the camera guys are incredible. They make the pictures speak and are a heartbeat away with what you're talking about. Then it's up to that director to capture everything and stay in the mode of what you guys are talking about. I mean, that's how I feel about this. I've always felt that way because you're constantly learning. I've been in this TV a long time, and any camera guy that I work with, you can ask any of them, or the producer and directors, I have incredible respect for these people because they make you look good. Mm. They get the stuff up there that they know you want to talk about in order to teach the public.
Hubie, you've had obviously many, many partners over your three decades in broadcasting, but I always sense that you particularly enjoyed it when it was you, Mike Tirico, and Jack Ramsey doing games together. I know you were very close to Jack, but was that a special experience for you, given who the two people were with you?
Everyone said that three in the booth on a radio would never work.
Right.
Well, I think that we proved that three in the booth on radio could be every bit as good as television. That's my ego talking, because Mike Tirico is a walking computer and an absolute incredible person in drawing out the talents of the people who work with him. Not only is he doing the game, and he's doing all of the drop-ins that has to go into the game, but he keeps you as an analyst, if it's television and it's just two of you, and then if it's radio and it's three of us, he keeps everybody sharp in the game and making contributions at the correct time. Now, with me and Jack Ramsey, we're going back not only as coaches through coaching against one another in NBA for years, but also because as a high school coach in New Jersey, I was a major fan of Jack Ramsey and the St. Joe's teams that he had because of their defenses of pressing and trapping, which I was using. And a lot of it came from his books that he would put out along with John Wooden on the West Coast, because they were always pressing and trapping. And I just liked that. And then through the years, naturally, I think you know this, that he and I, along with Calvin Murphy and Walton, did 25 clinics around the world for the NBA. So we have a special bond. And then my bond with he and his family. And then, unfortunately, when we lost Jack, it was a major loss. And I was affected. I'm seriously now. You hit a nerve. Because I love Jack Ramsey as a man. And I had incredible respect for him. Because when you were a frogman, in the Navy at that time, you were also a person who was a forerunner of the SEALs. And when we speak of the SEALs today, we know they're special.
Yeah.
And when you speak about Jack Ramsey, he has the highest place in regard by me as a man.
Yeah, I mean, an incredible life, an incredible guy, phenomenal family. You can't say enough things about him. And I know how close you were with Jack, so I appreciate you you sharing that. One of the things that when I was going to talk to you that people wanted me to ask you about, we'll end the podcast on some questions from listeners because they had a lot of them. But people seem to be curious, Hubie, about your thoughts on the advanced metrics of the NBA and whether, as a broadcaster, you're interested in them. You know, these are some of these new stats that have come up, and there's a lot of teams now that use them, and maybe actually they were used in different formats in your day. But what do you think of some of these new advanced numerical and metric stats?
Well, first of all, you have to understand the game. It isn't baseball where it's slow moving and you have 20 to 25 seconds between what's happening. And the same thing in football. All right, it's a game that's constantly on the move. So when I look at the metrics, I'll just say this to you. Mike and I did a television game a year ago when Washington was in the playoffs. And we're in Washington, so we're doing the coaches, and who comes into the room but Ernie Grunfeld, who played for me with the New York Knicks for 5 years.
Right.
Ernie walks into the room. We finish talking. Ernie comes over, and he says to Mike, he says, can you believe this guy with this metrics that's going on right now? And he said, back in the 80s, we were doing all this kind of metrics with the New York Knicks. So he said, I know that he's not new to it, and he must be laughing about what it's about. Well, I have respect for any coach that is using that and is getting results from what he is looking at. I have pages of math stuff because we do everything by statistics from high school to the pros, by the quarter, offensively and defensively, by every play that we're running during the game, by the fast breaks and second shots, and then deflections that tell us what we're doing in the open floor, and then how well our defenses are working with deflections. And then every play is charted as the game is going on. So if I say to one of the assistants, look, I want to go to Bernard King in a 53, where are we? And he'll say the 5 series is 5 for 8 right now. 53 is good because of the matchup.
Hmm.
We were using all this stuff all the way back.
Wow. That's
so nice. I'm not going to tell you that every part of this metrics is right. I'm not going to tell you that, because I don't want to undervalue what some coach is getting from all of this. We're all different. We all coach differently, and we all coach differently in situations. And see, we chart all of our defenses because when we had the Atlanta Hawks, we were the youngest team, and we had the lowest payroll. Well, we were in the playoffs 3 straight years and won a division. Why? Because we pressed and trapped the whole game. We pressed on makes, whether we were in a 1-2-1-1 zone press or we were playing a man-to-man. On every foul shot, we pressed 2-2-1. On every out-of-bounds ball, we were 1-3-1 half-court trap. On every miss, we were back playing a man-to-man. Well, one of our assistants is charting everything that you're doing against one of these. Now, when I went to Memphis, we would play you also zone. We'd play you 3-2 zone or 2-3 zone. And when we did that, our guy is charting what you're doing against that zone and then where the shots are coming from. Because under pressure, believe me, when it's a big game, NBA game that's going all around the world, going to 200 countries. There's a ton of pressure on you that you have got to make the right decisions, especially in a closeout. Well, you never want to close out running offensive stuff that's not working. You don't want to find out about this after the game. You don't want to find out about this tomorrow when you look at the film. You got to make your adjustments during the game. So to me, we have been doing that for years. And as soon as the game would end, you could ask any guy who coached with me, the guy who's in charge with the statistics on the offense and defense, before we leave to go out to get something to eat, I get a page of what we did on every single offense, every single side out of bounds, under out of bounds, then another page of what we were in every single defense that we were in, all right? Then it's up to me when I leave and I take the statistics of the game and I go back and I have a sandwich and a drink, I look at all of this and I can put together my practice for tomorrow morning off of what we have here tonight, whether it's a home game or a game on the road, so that I can speak to my assistants the next day at a high level of what we're doing and where we're emphasizing, whether for the next practices or for the next team we're playing.
That's fascinating.
I'm sorry if I'm talking so long, you're asking me a lot of questions that have depth.
Yeah, this is a podcast. We actually want you to talk long, Hubie. This is good. I have one basketball question before I get to the questions that people on Twitter forwarded me. And that is, you coached the 1975 Kentucky ABA team.
Correct.
And that team, in my opinion, never gets mentioned in the conversations for greatest teams of all time, but I think it should. Dan Issel, Louis Dampier, Artis Gilmore, and then if you look at the record of your team and you went on to win the championship that year, that's one of the great professional basketball teams of all time. Do you think that team has gotten lost in all the conversations about Golden State and the Bulls and some of these other great teams? And maybe,
well, of course.
Yeah, maybe that's an ABA thing.
No, see, you're right on that, and that's a great question because nobody talks about the ABA. Nobody talks about what guys did in the ABA, and nobody talks about the teams that were great in the ABA. That is by far the best team that I ever coached. Now, when I went there to coach that team, they had, back then the ABA only had 10 guys on a team.
Wow.
Because they were in the finals five times and never won, they changed four players and me, the coach. So when I went there to coach that team, we were four new guys, 10-man rotation, and back then I played 10 guys a quarter. And everybody still says he put in five guys at a time. I never put in five guys at a time ever. We do get by positions, whether it's three guys at a time or two guys, and then who's hot and who's not determines which way we go. And then also players would play minutes according to what I wanted them to play, and then the subs every night knew exactly what they were going to do. But I want to talk about that for a reason. That's the greatest team I've ever coached, and I coached some terrific teams in Atlanta and in New York, and then also the Memphis kids that were the second youngest team in Memphis, who never won more than 23 games. In the second year, we won 50. Well, that was because the coaching staff came in with philosophies in these places, and then the players have got to execute what you're putting in. But that Kentucky team, with Artis Gilmore and Dan Issel, we had the best high-low, double-low power game going. And then with Louis Dampier, we had one of the greatest three-point shooters, along with Wilbur Jones, the older brother of the Jones boys, where four of them played in the NBA. Wow. And the other brother was the head coach at Albany State in Georgia as a college coach. They were all from a little town called McGee, Arkansas. And what a family. And nobody under 6'9". Unbelievable. But that team was so blessed because our second unit was so good in pressing and trapping and forcing the action. It was just a great 10-man team. Now, when we went into the playoffs, we won 4-1, 4-1, and 4-1 and won a championship. Out of that, you brought up the great point because Issel was in the Hall of Fame before Artis got in and then Louis got in. And that was a testament to that. Now, why do I bring that out? Because at the end of the year, we were together 1 year. They sold Dan Issel to Baltimore for $500,000. They got to remember now, this is 1975.
Right, a lot of money.
They never opened up. They sold him to Denver. That's how he went to Denver to play on the front line with David Thompson and Bobby Jones.
Wow.
So we lost him he only played for us 1 year, and then they sold our point guard, who was the best defensive point guard in the league at 6'3", 190, from Tennessee State by the name of Teddy McClain. They sold him for $600,000 to the New York Nets at that time. So we were only together that short period of time. I'm sorry, not 600. Dan got was 500. I don't know what they got for Teddy McClain. But we lost both guys. Now, that hurt us the next year, all right, where we lost in 7 games to Denver in the second round, and then in the third round, they lost the championship to the Nets. Now, why do I bring that up? I bring that up in that defense of that team because they were only together 1 year.
Right. And the thing that's interesting, there's two things in doing research about this team which I found really interesting. One, Artis Gilmore was 25 at the time. Dampier was 30. Dan Issel was 26. So you're talking about guys in their prime. I mean, they were, if not even maybe a little bit before their prime. So this team could have been unbelievable if they stayed together, as you know. And Hubie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that Dr. J said that this was the best team he ever saw, including his NBA teams.
Well, we had great series with the Nets, always great series, because that was Doc before the injuries. Dr. J and George McGinnis were the two best players in the league. George McGinnis played for the Indiana Pacers. And Dr. J, they were two that were at a whole different level. Now, remember, I am not talking to you about Dan Issel or Artis Gilmore or Louis Dampier or George Gervin, who only led the league, the NBA, in scoring 4 times after we merged, okay? I'm not talking about all of the incredible players that were in that league. The only reason why we merged is because all of the best young players were going to the ABA teams because they were giving them better salaries. So the NBA knew that they had to merge because to get all of that young talent over there. Well, our series with the New York Nets were just absolutely special. And we enjoyed playing against Doc and his team because they were so good. They won the championship in 74. We won it in 75. And then they won it again in 76 on the last year of the league. And I had nothing but the greatest respect because Julius Erving would sell out every single building in the league when he came to town, because there was no better man to represent the league, not only of how he played, but how he conducted himself, and then how the guys on every team totally respected Dr. J, what he did. Because he did things which we never saw before above the floor and above the rim. Never saw anything like it. He did, but then unfortunately we came in the NBA. He was injured a lot and because of the leg, but he still was incredible in the NBA. But we in the ABA, we love Doc because Doc did it every night.
All right, I'm going to finish up, Hubie, with a couple questions from our listeners. One is from a Lee Gerowitz, who asks you, how do you handle travel at your age, and do you follow social media for research purposes? Are you ever involved in Twitter or Facebook or anything like that?
The last part of your question, no. I'm 82 now, and I had to change my travel. I always go the afternoon before, late afternoon, so I get before the traffic in that town if I'm doing a game the next night. I always make sure now that, believe it or not, I used to stay up until 1 a.m. in the morning all the time watching all the games on DirecTV. Now I go to bed at 11:30 at night, and I make sure that I get 8 hours of sleep home or on the road. Hmm. Then, because of the way that ESPN ABC treats me, the travel to the airport, you get limo, and then you fly first class, and then you get limo to the hotel after you land. So the preparation has to be there. And then after games, we don't go out to different places to go eat and stuff like that. What we'll do is we'll go back to the hotel, and you might have a drink and sit around and talk. But it's cut down because of how early is your next flight out. Are you going to another game, or are you going back home? Now, that's a good question, but remember now, when you're younger, you have more stamina, and you can go out, and you can do things, stay up later, and then cheat on your sleep. But when you're older, you can't do that.
How do you change, if you change at all, when you're doing a television broadcast versus a radio broadcast?
Well, see, when you do television, it depends upon the guy you're working with. You're at the mercy of the guy that you're working with when he gives you the mic. Now, remember, in baseball, when the pitcher throws the ball, the catcher catches it and throws it back to the pitcher, the analyst comes in and can talk for 20 to 25 seconds. Well, it's the same thing in football. When the down is over, the announcer gives it to the analyst. He can come in and he can draw. He can do it. You got replays on every play. He's got another 20, 25 minutes. Well, when you're working with a guy, you're at the mercy of that analyst to give you the mic. When the ball goes through the basket, you have until the ball gets across half court to the three-point line to come in with an X and O with what the person saw or something to amuse the person. But you're limited here to anywhere between 5 and 8 seconds. Now, that's a good announcer on television talking with an analyst who has something to add. Now, on the radio, you can't do that, because on the radio, the pressure now is more on the announcer. The announcer not only has to describe the game with pictures, with words, that individual is under great pressure, and A, to be the voice has got to be there, the B, he has to paint the picture so that you can see where the ball is and where the action is happening. And then he also has to, he's under a lot of strain with the commercials. So you now have to pick your spot, and your time limit is even less. You're in and out very, very quick, or you might even pass a couple of exchanges because of the radio, because that guy is working hard. There's more pressure on the announcer on the radio, and then there's less time for you. But when you get in, you want to make sure you come in with credibility.
All right, here are the final two, Hubie, and we thank you very much for your time. If you were coaching still, how would you try to slow down or stop Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors?
Well, we don't have enough time for all of that. But the first thing you would do is that you would press them man-to-man and have him reverse twice by the time he got to half court. Now, that's tough on your point guard. All right, now, you say, oh, well. Oh, no, don't tell me, oh, well, because that's how we used to do it to Magic Johnson and to Isaiah Thomas and then to John Stockton and then to Kevin Johnson and all of the great point guards throughout the 70s and 80s. So I don't want to hear that you can't turn him twice by the time he gets to half court. And you say, why are you doing that? Because by the time he crosses half court, the shot clock is down to 16, 15, or 16 seconds at max. So as he comes across half court, you've eliminated now how many options they can run. Now, when you watch them play, it's beautiful, because there are a lot of misdirection, there are a lot of pick and rolls, there's a lot, and where they hurt you the most is on the opposite side of the floor with their back screening, their down screening. And you just watch them the next time, you'll see all kinds of layups. Now, as far as him coming off of the pick and rolls where he gets the threes and he gets the shot off so quickly, well, today he can come off of that, and if you trap him, you can't put a hand on him. But you must trap him hard. And when you trap hard, is you force the dribbler to now take the ball a step back to half court. Now, you say, yeah, but now he'll pass over the top. Correct. Because if you don't do that, you'll see what you're seeing every night, and that is him shooting 11 to anywhere. He's averaging over 11 threes a game, all right, and up to 15 threes that he will take. If you don't step up and force him back, and then the guy playing him, follow him over the top, you have got to put the pressure on him. Now, for all of the people who are listening to this, in the old days, you would follow the great shooters over the top. You would step out, and as soon as the contact happened, your hand would go on the hand checking. The forearm would go on his chest as he's dribbling. But now, once we take away hand checking, he has that distance between the defender. So you've got to trap him hard. And unfortunately, teams are not doing that. Now, in the game against the Lakers that we did last Sunday, that's the first team I've seen trap him that hard to limit his three-point opportunities. You say, yeah, well, they passed over the top. So what? Because his percentage at that level, at that area, and if it's back to pick, if it's a 30-foot shot, see, you've been guarding him all the way down the floor. He doesn't come over cross half court and have a look at the basket without any type of defensive pressure. You got to put pressure on him all the way. Well, you're going to say, oh, well, then give the ball to Klay Thompson. We would love to have them have Klay Thompson dribble the ball because that takes off all of their baseline motion. Once you take away something, they have got to prove that they can do something else, especially at playoff time. Enjoy what he's doing. I've been around since 73. I've never seen anything like it because of the percentage of the three-point and then the percentage beyond 30 feet. We've never seen better eye-hand coordination on the ball pickup. That's the key. The ball pickup and the release. We've never seen anything that quick. And then, come on now, what did he average last year? 23. This year, 30. What did he do? Over the summer, he worked on all of those ball drills that he does now. He can cross over with either hand, go through his legs, and behind his back, coming off of a screen. You've never seen that before, and don't tell me you have. So I'm a big fan. And he is, now all you would do by pressing him, what you're saying, 48-minute game, you got to wear the guy down. But because they've taken away the hand check, they've taken away the forearm, and then going to the basket, you're not allowed to put him on the floor. And if you're not allowed to put him on the floor, like in the 70s and 80s, don't tell me now that Michael Jordan couldn't have scored more points because of the threat of the flagrant foul one and the flagrant foul two. So you've taken away shot blocking. Shot blocking is down now. But if you would now put in hand checking, put in the forearm against the cutters on the opposite side or on the dribbler, and then you put in the hard foul, someday just watch 30-30 the bad boys, and you'll see how difficult it was for Michael Jordan getting up off the floor time and time again on the hard foul, and all it was a two-shot attempt, no flagrant one, no flagrant two. Those guys stayed in the game. It is a different game. Today, it is a runway to the basket. You have an opportunity as a perimeter player to get to the rim.
Hubie, I appreciate you answering that very much. And the final question is, if I gave you the opportunity to broadcast any basketball team in history, So you can go back as long as you want, and you could take it to current day. Would there be a particular team that you would just – I'm only talking as a broadcaster, not as a coach. Would there be one team or group that you would choose, and if so, why?
Now, that's so hard because I've been around a long time. See, when you go back to the 50s and the Boston Celtics winning those 7-8 championships in a row
– right.
Come on now, you were watching something that people had never seen before, but they never had seen that style, that fast-breaking, unbelievable style anchored by Bill Russell and doing incredible things. But remember, the lane was narrower then. The lane went from 6 feet to 12 feet to now 16 feet. Now, then when you talk about the great teams, come on, what about Showtime? What about Showtime with Kareem and Magic and James Worthy and that cast of guys that they had in the 80s that were in the finals 8 out of 10 years? 8 out of 10 years they were in the finals, won 5 championships, Celtics won 3.
Right.
Now, just think about that era.
Yeah, amazing.
Okay? Then when you say 80 in the mid-80s with the Celtics, well, they claim that's the best Celtic basketball team in 1986. So then the Jordan years, when you talk about the 3 championships and then the next 3 championships, for me, I go back too far. I have seen great, great teams. Well, you can only evaluate them for what they did at the time period that they played in, and you can only appreciate what they did at that level of excellence at that time period. You can't be crossing over and saying this is better than that, because with the lane widening, like I told you, don't just throw that one away, because now the lane is 16 feet wide. So it changed in post play. It changed what happens in the paint. And then when you talk about the runway now, where we've opened up basketball and we've opened up football on those flankers, everybody wants to compare points by basketball players versus older guys. Well, they didn't have a 3-point line. That didn't come in until 1980. And they also had hand checking and the forearm and the hard foul. So you can't compare guys or teams at that level versus teams now. I'm just happy that I still get invited to go to these games and sit at half court and have a great seat, because we are seeing some incredible basketball. And right now, if you were a basketball coach, you would love what you see night in and night out at Golden State, because of the flow of the offense and the great defense that they play, which is underrated dramatically. And then the San Antonio Spurs with their continuity and their style of play. One is emphasized on the three ball, because they take 31 a game. The other team is on the three ball, but they only take 18. Why? Because they have a great post-up game in Duncan and Aldridge, and then Duncan and the guys before him. So, hey, I'm going to tell you something. I just want to thank you very much, because you got me all excited here. And it's been a pleasure, because you came with great questions, and I mean that, okay? It's been a joy.
Hubie, I appreciate that, and it's always great to talk to you. We at Sports Illustrated, I think I can speak for the brand here. We really admire your passion and your teaching of the game to generations of people on broadcasting, and that's a great gift that you've given a lot of fans. So we thank you for taking the time to be on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, and continued success heading forward. We'll certainly be watching and listening to you.
Well, thank you very much for the kind words, and thank you for the opportunity today.
You got it. Thank you, Hubie. Take care. All right, back in the studio after, our thanks to Hubie Brown. That was very nice of him to say that about me, Beth.
It's got your ego all stoked.
I got my
now.
Ego stoked. Hubie Brown is living history. He morphs the game from, at least in the, to like from Dr. J to LeBron. I mean, there's essentially, like, in terms of coaching, there's no one else around like him who morphs that. I maybe Pat Riley or someone. I have to sort of go check the math. But if you are a basketball fan, and like in particular like a basketball wonk, that was like 50 minutes of just like total education, Bet. Like it's just, you really just sit, at least I have always loved Hubie Brown. You sit back and you listen. And you're like, even how he was describing how to stop Steph Curry, that was amazing.
Yeah, he's clearly so passionate about the game and just knows so much. And I think your question about it was something like, how do you keep up with the game, or not keep up with the game, but like, right, how do you learn, adapt to the game,
what do you,
or something?
Yeah, well, it's all like, what do you like in terms of learning now about the game? Is it through coaches?
Yes,
is it through
yeah.
film? Is it through TV?
Like, even then, like, he keeps up with it. And it's an incredibly, and he's so knowledgeable. He's like a sponge. It feels like he just absorbs everything around him. And
82?
Yeah, the guy's he's quick for 82.
Unbelievable.
Geez.
Yeah, I mean, we should all be that
exactly. He's
that facile.
And I mean, you know, we may chuckle at the fact that he, you know, has such a routine schedule all the way down to the limos. But hell, when you're 82, like,
hell yeah,
that's what you got to do.
I'll take that right now. All right. Well, our thanks to Hubie Brown. That was phenomenal. And I hope you like it. The last couple podcasts have been really, really good, from Zach Lowe, another NBAer, and Ivan Mazel, who was really thoughtful and honest about how he's dealt with the passing of his son. We've got some good ones coming up, including Renee Young of the WWE. I'm always interested in sort of the reporter position in the WWE, or the broadcaster position. Ken Burns is coming up, and Kara Lawson, the fine ESPN basketball analyst. So those are the ones coming up. Should be really, really good. My thanks to Bette Marston for producing this. Thanks to Dan Bloom, Ryan Hunt, Paul Fichtenbaum, John Wertheim for their support. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.